Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Retronauts Live. I am your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and today's topic is the Sega Pico. Before I get started here, who is with me in this room here?
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert, ready to learn.
And who else?
And my name is Sam.
And yes, we're talking about the Pico, and this was all Sam's idea. I worked with Sam earlier on an episode you'll hear in the future, but she said, maybe perhaps as a joke, Sam, I'm not sure, like, I know a lot about the Pico, and you expected me to chuckle perhaps, but I was like, no, that's an episode. And now you're here as a Pico enthusiast to tell me what it was like to grow up with the Pico. I'm a bit older than you, and when I saw that in a magazine, I was like, that's for babies. So
yes, Picos are for babies.
Now we have an actual baby on the show. I'm kidding. She's a grown woman, everybody. But she lived the Pico lifestyle in the 90s, and I'm sure it made you very smart, as was advertised in the commercials.
I imagine that you were using the Game Gear at the time.
I was a Nintendo boy. I read about Sega sort of out of jealousy that I wanted one, but I was really into Nintendo.
I had a Game Gear and a Game Boy. I was a very spoiled child.
I guarantee all of my games may be stupider, though.
I was tempted by a Pico until I saw it at Toys R Us, and I had the same reaction of like, this is for babies, and I'm not a baby. I'm a mature boy.
I'm a strapping 11-year-old.
The Pico was a magical learning experience.
We'll get into the actual Pico experience in a second. I want to go over some details. So, of course, the Pico is, Sega calls it the computer that thinks it's a toy. That was their pitch for it. And it is a learning computer, if you will, as Arnold would say. It makes you learn. It doesn't learn itself. And I want to give a little information about the context in which the Pico was released to give you an idea of what was happening in the world of games at this time. So Pico was a kid's learning toy. And in this era, many things were happening in the world of games. Number one, we were in the depths of the 16-bit console wars. They were at their absolute worst, and only that Christmas would they end with Donkey Kong Country, which was sort of like basically the all-out assault against Sega. Nintendo tricking people into thinking that their Nintendos were very powerful when they actually weren't, and people believed it, and it was an okay game, and that is really what pushed Nintendo over the edge as the winner. Sega had, frankly, too many products on the market, and this was one of them. Later this month, or perhaps earlier, I don't know the exact date of the Pico. It was November of 94, but also in November, the 32X launched, and that really, it was, and number one, it was disappointing, but number two, Sega had too many things on the market. Consumers were not educated. There was no internet. They didn't know what played what. So it was much safer to just get a Nintendo or just to get a blank and not worry about all of the add-ons and accessories and different systems. It was a much easier proposition to just get one thing.
Yeah, and this was, I mean, the date you gave was for the North American release, I believe. The Pico actually came out a year earlier in Japan.
That's right, June 93.
Yeah, and it was quite the smash hit amongst children's.
But with that time, too, is just Sega. Sega got too full of itself, I think. I think they were thinking, like, we've already beaten Nintendo, so we could release, like, three things and make Nintendo the fourth console in America. And it was, as a child who lived through those console wars at age 12, like, trying to pick out gifts, I was just like, wait, is this for a letter to Santa? I was like, so is a 32X this, or is it that? Like, what is this thing?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, but I think it was Sega's assumption that their hardware, since it was, they thought it was better, that it would just sell itself. Right.
In terms of pure technical specs, it wasn't better, but they had a lot of marketing that fooled people into thinking it was better by things using words like blast processing and things like that. It had a few advantages over the Super Nintendo, but ultimately the Super Nintendo had more colors, and it had a sound chip.
But their marketing team couldn't be beat until they got beat. But for a while, this 94 was their real fail. I think it was partially they got beat by Donkey Kong Country in a marketing sense, because they let their eyes off the ball. If they just focused on one thing for 94.
Just the Genesis, not the Sega CD, not the 32X. I'm sorry, Sam, not
Don't
Pico.
Don't forget the Pico.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And one thing I just thought of now is that so in December of 1993, the Senate sub-hearings on video game violence happened. You can watch all of those. You can see all of the out-of-touch adults who are still in politics, not understanding video games. But basically, Sega was thrown under the bus, especially by Nintendo. Nintendo was saying things like, no, our games are for children. Adults don't play video games. You cannot make violent games because children will play them.
My competitor is lying to you. They made Night Trap to destroy children.
Exactly. And it destroyed my brain. And there's so many people in prison who have Night Trap to blame today. But I think the Pico, of course, it was a Japanese product, and Japan was untouched by that violent scandal. I believe Sega embraced the Pico because it would give them a more wholesome image. And that if you look at the commercials especially, it's like this is beneficial to children. We are directly trying to help children when children are playing violent video games. They're watching bad TV and things like that. I think they were trying to say, like, look at the good we're doing in the world.
Well, that was like an infomercial for the Pico also, which is really funny.
Yeah.
It was like a kid watching the TV and it's like crazy, stupid stuff happening.
Like some sort of Jerry Springer-esque TV show is on.
Yeah, like your kids watch TV, but they could be learning.
Well, it is a smart move from a PR standpoint of like the Sega representatives are being asked to appear on, say, the Today Show or Good Morning America, and are being asked like, hey, you know, this stuff's really bad for kids, I've heard, or they're seeing characters kill each other in this Mortal Kombat game and it's teaching them to murder people, that now they have this stupid little suitcase that they can pick up the,
don't
like,
you call a Pico stupid, you take
sorry,
that back.
Sorry, they
the
have
Pico
this
Pico positive zone.
They have this wonderful little suitcase that they can pick up and say, no, we're helping children. Look at this. Like, we're not teaching kids to kill each other. Like, this is, we are interested in the children's future, unlike Nintendo.
Nintendo wants you to play with a cruel ape.
Outside of the console wars, though, there was a lot of different educational technology that was being developed at the time.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So before this, in my era as a child, I remember things like the Socrates, which like a rich family I knew had, and it was sort of like the Pico in a sense, in that it was a mock-up of a computer. You played it on your TV, of course, like the Pico, but it had more of a keyboard setup, but it was really the same, like, what if we made a computer for kids? But, of course, the Pico is much more advanced than that.
Yeah, VTech also came out with, after the Socrates, a bunch of different laptops that were for kids. I had a VTech laptop. I forget what it was called.
Was it the they eventually bought the Leapfrog company, and Leapfrog would be basically the successful version of the Pico before the age of apps. Oh, wait, sorry. It was successful.
Well, in Japan. The Pico also was I recognize it now as the kind of like edutainment software in the computer labs at the school I went to that like my family didn't really have. I guess they had word processor type games that came built into the system, but like I was not going to tell – my parents weren't going to buy edutainment software. They just saw it as like, well, you have a budget for a game. If you want to buy something that teaches you math, then that will be your game gift. And I was never going to pick that over, you know, Mega Man or something else.
Yeah. I'll learn on the school's time.
Yeah. I actually loved educational games so much, especially PC games. I loved educational PC games.
I think they were much higher quality and more fun than the ones that we play like 8 or 9 years earlier.
I had Number Muncher. That was my favorite.
Oregon Trail is where it kind of peaked in the late 80s, early 90s for me.
Yeah, I mean, there was Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Yes.
That was quite good. But now my systems, I didn't even play that game until a friend of mine got it on their PC.
I loved it.
As you can see, Retronauts is all about whose nostalgia is correct. But yeah, what were the other educational games of this era outside of Pico that you played? I'm really interested.
You know, it's funny. When I think back, I had a whole series of games, I think, that were like done in part with like Scholastic or something. I don't remember the names of them, but I loved them. I also really liked sort of adventure-y type games, like the Nancy Drew PC games that had come out.
They would integrate adventure mechanics with edutainment all the time in this era.
Yeah, and I know the Magic School Bus had a whole league of PC games that were really fun.
That school bus is all over the Pico, right?
Yeah, okay. The Magic School Bus had a game on Pico as well. There's just so many great games, educational games at the time. I think I learned like 80% of the math that I got. Because I was a school, if you guys didn't take away from our last conversation, I skipped a lot of school. So I think I think PC games taught me a whole lot.
They taught you to skip school and
Well, no, they taught me things that I missed on the days I wasn't going. Those games were really...
Video games did lead you astray is what you're saying.
No, they didn't.
But they also helped you.
I think that video games kept me on track.
I mean... All learning should be delivered through games, I believe. I think that'd be best for all of us.
Learning games were a very magical experience, and the Pico was my first one. I got one when the year it came out. I was 4 years old.
Wow. So one last thing about the context of the Pico era, as we call it, officially known as the Pico era, the 90s. Nintendo didn't do anything similar, really. They were really devoted to the Super Nintendo. And the most similar thing they had to the Pico was Mario Paint, but it was really a creativity toy, not something that would explicitly teach you things.
Big fan.
Big fan.
I'm a huge fan of Mario Paint. Super Nintendo. I got the Super Nintendo the same year I got the Pico.
Oh, nice.
And
did you get Mario Paint as well?
It came with it.
Oh, that's awesome. And
I still have the mouse and the pad that it came with.
To think of a time when a mouse is this amazing, like, extra thing, like, it's a mouse.
It was, like, the weirdest peripheral that Nintendo ever came out with, and they only made, like, 3 games for that mouse.
Yeah. They had a couple more they didn't let it release out of Japan. The Mario and Wario, I believe that's the name.
Mario and Mario.
That's my favorite of the ones they didn't release, just because it's such a weird corner of the Mario-verse of the Mushroom Kingdom, especially with the... Just they're walking around with a bucket on their head. They're just always, or something else obscuring their sight.
It's a bucket.
Yeah.
Mario drops a bucket on Mario's head, and you have to guide him through a level.
But sometimes other characters, they have different crap on their head.
No, I was way into Mario Paint, and I remember this era. You could only save 2 things in Mario Paint to the cartridge. So I remember calling my parents up a lot to show them the latest thing I had made. And I'm just getting very fatigued by it. Like, great. Make it better next time if you're going to call me up here.
I explored with Mario Paint for so long. Not only was I like completely enamored with it as a kid, but I also like as I got older would try to like make my own songs in their little tool. I never got as good as any of the ones you've seen on YouTube, though.
Man, I'm jealous of you Mario Painters. I did play around with MS Paint a little bit as a kid, which one of my favorite things was that my daycare, we had MS Paint program that was the Ninja Turtles, Paint the Ninja Turtles. So it was just a template and you just click in the colors. And it really worked well with the Ninja Turtles because you could decide which turtle it was in the drawing based on which color you made their mask.
But don't they have their unique weapons?
In some of them. In others, though, they were just eating pizza.
What if Raphael picked up Don's bow? I think it would look like this.
So you guys are talking about coloring in children's games or in these color book style games. Pico did this better than anything else.
I believe it.
It was magical.
I mean, we'll get into the hardware of it in a minute, but it had a stylus. It has a touchpad. You could touch the actual Storyware book. Before we get any further into this, I do want to play the commercial for Pico, one of them, that really will sort of tell you the intentionality behind this, or at least the way Sega wanted to market it.
It's such a dry commercial.
A child's mind is like a sponge, absorbing everything.
Middle-aged men who want to be teenage girls next.
So make it the right things with Pico. It turns TV into your kid's first computer and turns on the power of their imaginations. With storybook software, turn the page and images come alive on TV. Kids learn numbers, music, reading,
D-O-G-Dog,
and more. Most kids spend 3 hours a day glued to TV. Pico makes it a smart 3 hours.
So, yeah.
Middle-aged men turn into teenage girls next on. Did you guys catch that on TV?
Yeah, progressive message there.
Well, oh, my God.
I know.
When I watched that commercial for the first time, I was like, you should not have the kids commercial made by the same team who makes your Genesis commercials.
They're kind of
a different group.
They should have, I think that the marketing of the Pico was a massive failure in North America because they could have really marketed it to children better.
Make it colorful and silly and put that on Nick Jr.
Make it a toy commercial for toys.
Yeah. I mean, this is speaking directly to the parents, of course, because, your kid watches 3 hours of TV a day. I'm like, 3 hours, you lightweight.
Yeah.
Call me when you get to 8 when you're a kid.
I was
TV was my babysitter.
Exactly.
Me too.
I was raised by TV.
But yeah, yeah. Like the commercial, if you go online and watch it, it is a it's like advertising to sort of upper middle class parents. The mom is like sitting in the background with her laptop watching her kid interact with Pico. Mm. So I feel like that is the audience they're looking for. It wasn't that expensive of a tool, but I think they wanted people with a little more money to be interested in this.
Well
it was expensive at the time.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a computer, but it was like $160.
Well, yeah, bam. It's a lot of money for a toy.
And you're these parents who are terrified your children are watching Sally, Jesse, Raphael instead of something else. So, but yeah, I think too they had to aim a little higher because you're thinking of somebody like if they're buying a Pico, they probably already own a Genesis. So this needs to be a family that will buy a second console in the lifespan of a console.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have a Genesis, but I had a Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was somebody's second console purchase at the very least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basic information about the Pico, it was released in November of 1994 in America and discontinued in February of 1998, though people have not done a lot of Pico research, including me. I tried to find the best sources I could. Apparently, it was supported long after this in Japan into the 2000s, and this was a much more successful product in Japan than it was in America. And in fact, in Japan, there are over 300 StoryWare titles. And in America, there were 20 released. So that really gives you an idea of the sheer amount of games and just how much more popular it was in Japan. I don't know if the marketing was better, if there was more of a demand for it. I don't understand why it was better in
Japan.
Well,
in 1998, Sega of America, they didn't know what the hell they were doing at all. Like,
yeah,
so,
that was like get rid of everything.
Yeah, they're like cancel everything. We have one thing we're going to be selling next year. Cancel everything else. And I can get why they killed it then. But also, those for like 96 and 97, they barely knew how to market the Saturn. While meanwhile, like kids' things were going in a totally different direction in the late 90s.
I didn't even know about the Saturn until way later in life. Like, totally slow. I mean, I was a Nintendo kid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Pico. That hurts.
It was sort of a blink and you miss it system, though, the Saturn. It was the launch was such a bad failure, and it was immediately gutted in terms of the price, and then it just disappeared from stores. So
yeah,
if you missed it, I wouldn't blame you.
I was like, you know, I think I was like 20 years old when I like learned about the Saturn. I like didn't know about it at all.
Launch day for us, baby.
I got a free Saturn in high school because I lent a friend a Dragon Ball GT tape. I'm wearing a Vegeta t-shirt right now, by the way. I lent a friend a Dragon Ball GT tape. And he was like, the next day he's like, oh, you know, my brother broke it in the tape rewinder. I'll give you something to make up for it. He gives me his Saturn in like 15 games. I didn't protest, but I'm like, how much did you think this fan sub tape cost? It was like $20, but I didn't say anything. I gladly took a Saturn.
That's a great story. I used to trade anime VHS tapes with my friends as well.
I didn't know it was a going concern in Japan for so long until at an old job like 10 years ago when I was writing an article on like obscure Pokemon games, that's when I was finding this one on lists. It was like – and it listed Pico. I was like, well, no, not the Pico, right? I was like, whoa. I can't believe it.
Yeah, a Pokemon game.
Yeah, this game is online on YouTube if you want to watch it. It's just bizarre to see Pokemon exist in the Sega – the world of Sega. It shouldn't be. It should not be at all, but it did.
It's a really simple game. It's a lot of just like tracing letters.
Yeah, it's all about learning katakana, I think. Most of it is.
I could use that, man.
Yeah, me too. Sign me up for
Maybe
Pico.
Maybe you guys should pick yourselves up a Pico. It's only $35 on eBay.
Oh my God, I'm signing
up now. My
next
trip to Japan, I'm buying that and the copy of that game.
So it launched at $139 at retail. It was eventually purchased and relaunched by Majesco in 1999 as a budget system, I believe, for $50. And then the StoryWare titles were $20. But I don't believe they actually went to the length to actually bring out more games for it. I believe it was just the 20
That
games.
Was in general what Majesco did with I remember in like 2000 or so going to a Toys R Us and seeing that they had like a Sega Nomads and Game Gears back on sale. And they had the Majesco label on them. I think it was just Majesco either bought the rights to make new boxes of them, or they just bought their they brought their inventory and just slapped stickers on
them.
They
bought the warehouse. They raided the warehouse.
It was a smart move by Majesco.
So the numbers are really fuzzy. Again, it was hard to find like concrete research. I went to the Sega Retro Wiki. I went to Wikipedia. I dug into message boards. No real numbers on this, but I believe the rough estimate of sales in America is around 400,000. Mm-hmm. And it's over 3 million in Japan. So there's a real disparity between here and Japan as to how popular it was.
The Japanese games that came out for were also like way cooler. They had like
a lot. Yeah.
They had a Hello Kitty game. They had a Sailor Moon game.
There's so much anime tie-ins on the Pico, way more than the – there's not a lot of cartoon tie-ins for the American titles. They're mostly all based on existing book properties like Richard Scarry, the Magic School Bus, and things like that.
Mm-hmm,
I don't know if there are any explicit –
there's the Bernstein Bears one.
I'm looking at the list. I guess Sesame Street is the closest thing to a tie-in to a television show. But yeah, the Japanese side had a lot more anime games, like games based on things that weren't educational, like Sailor Moon.
Yeah, it's funny because I loved Sailor Moon and – well, at that age, I liked Sanrio. There was a Hello Kitty cartoon that was really popular.
Okay. I have a lot of notes about the hardware, but Sam has experience with the Pico. Can you explain what it is, what it looks like, how it functions? Because I've never actually – I've seen them at retro gaming cons, but I've never opened one or interacted with one.
It's a teal and purple clamshell masterpiece.
Yeah, number one, teal and purple are the most 90s-ass colors. I liked the Charlotte Hornets in the 90s. The only time I watched basketball because of the colors of the team. So
yeah.
I had a lot of Charlotte Hornets gear because I liked teal and purple.
Yes. Teal and purple with a yellow Pico logo slapped on the top.
Perfect.
It had a handle, so you could carry that baby around with you.
Way ahead of the
GameCube. I don't know why you would, because it was really fucking heavy.
And you needed wires, too. It wasn't wireless.
It probably weighed like half of a four-year-old.
Like, I remember being four and moving it from, like, I had a little TV in my bedroom, and I would, like, try to drag it over there because I'd like, I want to sit on my bed, drag the thing over.
You literally had to like just drag it across the floor.
Yeah, like it was not very light. It was very clunky, but it was really cool. You opened it up and it had an area where you would put a cartridge that was shaped like a book.
And what were the pages of that book like? I couldn't get a sense for if they were made of plastic or just thick cardboard or what was it?
Plastic.
Okay, they were plastic.
They were plastic pages.
And how many pages would there be usually, like six, seven?
Yeah, I would say around six pages, give or take. Some of them were a little simpler than others, and some of them had much more simpler games inside than others. And then you would insert the book into the cartridge and the book cartridge into the slot, and there was a touchpad, but it wasn't actually a touchpad. It was a magnetic resonance frequency.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was pretty amazing technology for the
day. That sounds
dangerous. For 94, it was really ahead of it. It wasn't like a pressed down. When I first looked at it in a video I watched on it, I thought it was the same as like a DS or whatever, where it's pressed down, that it's the pad that takes the input, not the pen, but it is the stylus that does it, thanks to that magnetic resonance.
That magnetic resonance technology.
And you can actually, you touch the pad and you can also touch the things on the book itself.
Yes.
So you get things to happen in the game.
So there was there was also a button on the pen. So you would, in order to select things, basically, you would drag the pen around and it would move where it wanted to on the TV. And to select things on the TV, you would press the pen. Into the
And
yeah,
what I got out of it in videos is that basically you turn the page for a new experience. Like there are different experiences on every page.
Yeah, some of them were very storybook, like the Pocahontas one kind of like took you through Pocahontas. Hmm. Like, and other ones were more just like, here's a new mini game. Here's another new mini game. Some of them were purely coloring books where every page was just like a new page to color. And the cool part about it was it as a child, it was magical because I loved books. My mom was always reading. My mom and dad both were huge readers and always reading to me all the time. And I learned how to read really early on. So I loved books. I was just completely in love with books. And this was mind-blowing to my four-year-old brain.
You thought Pico was the future of reading.
I was like, holy shit. These books are alive. It was crazy.
That's great. I can't imagine what I would think with this technology if I was as young as you in 1994.
It was like, and there was nothing like this then. You know, we're so used to touchpad everything now, our touch screens and our phones and our tablets.
Yeah.
It's normal.
I saw a great video on Facebook, actually. It's one of those like things that just gets passed around. There's like 8 billion views on it. But it's of a little girl being handed a Game Boy Color. Mm-hmm. And she's like touching the screen and like she doesn't know how to work it, even though all the buttons are right there in front of her. She's mm-hmm. just touching the screen. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah.
Thinks that's how it works. So this was mind-blowing. I think my parents even thought it was cool.
And the buttons on it, it did have buttons, though, too, and they were like candy, even more something like a GameCube mm-hmm. controller. They were just big and colorful buttons.
There's a huge red button, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Most of the games could be done exclusively with the pad. You don't have to use the buttons that often. Like, a lot of the stuff was easily done with the pen. And it was cool, like, with any of the painting stuff, you know, there would be like little color palettes on the page, and you would touch the page and then touch the I don't know what you call it now, like it's not a touchpad, but the mm-hmm. the drawing board, the one other side of the tablet, you would it would change colors. It was magic. It was really cool.
Yeah,
really cool.
That technology, even though it used the Genesis hardware, it was the interface was something that most people hadn't really used on the consumer level before. So I can definitely see how that could be totally impressive at the time.
I highlighted all the games I had, and I realized that I had a lot of games for the Pico.
Wow. I want to mention one more thing before we get into the games. So the Pico, I'm not sure if you guys knew this, but the Pico had a sequel in Japan. It was so popular in Japan in 2005, the Advanced Pico Bina came out.
I had no idea about this.
I only just found out about it via research. If you look it up on wikis, there are like 8 different models, and some of them are themed after different anime characters. But it is very much like the Pico. Obviously, the hardware is much better because it was built in 2005. But that is how much staying power the Pico had that a decade later, they had a sequel. I don't believe Sega produced it, but it is an official Pico, the Advanced Pico Bina. But yeah, Sam, you have a lot of the games. Actually, I think you listed all of the games that came out for North America.
Yeah, I did. And then I highlighted the ones that I had.
That's about that new system. That's so funny to think in 2005 that if people had heard, Sega's coming back to hardware with the Pico sequel. They're making a new Pico.
I can see why they kept quiet about that in America.
Is it teal and purple?
No, it's much more muted in terms of the appearance. But yeah, I'm teal and purple, come back.
I know.
We miss you.
That's a color combination. That's a winning color combination.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So of the games that came out, I don't know if you want me to list them all. But
oh, yeah. Like, we can go through them. There's only 20.
There's only 20 games total, and I only know about the ones that I had, really, because I didn't get to experience the others.
We can pause on the ones that you have, and then we could talk about those. So mm-hmm. go ahead.
Should I grade them? Should I be like 10?
Grade 10. Them based on the pure concept. Like, 10. A year of Pooh Corner, give me a weekend. 3 out of 10.
Okay. Adventures in Letterland with Jack and Jill. Crayola Creator World, Disney's Pocahontas Riverbend Adventure, which was amazing.
I did see this online. There are like action segments where she's going down the river and everything.
That one was so good. It was so well done.
Did it have a version of Just Around the Riverbend in there?
I don't remember, actually, but Pocahontas was my favorite Disney movie.
Oh, wow.
So I loved it. Disney's Lion King, Adventures at Pride Rock. That was really cool. Had fun games.
What kind of games were included in
that? There was a game where you had to, I believe, collect bugs or like feed Pumbaa bugs or something like that.
That sounds on brand.
Yeah, it was very silly. It was fun. Echo Jr. and the Great Ocean Treasure Hunt. That was majestic, as you would expect from an Echo game.
Echo the Dolphin, I have some dangerous opinions about this, but trying to revisit this game that I never played initially in the day, it is a grueling, punishing game, and I find it pretty funny that there is a kid's version of this. What exactly took place in the Echo Jr. world?
I actually could barely tell you, but I know that it has to do with, like, gem collecting or something like that.
Did it teach you about sea life and dolphin life?
It probably tried.
Okay.
I imagine it tried. There was like bubbles in the game. I remember that. I'm basing this all off rough memory. Like it's been 24 years.
We were very excited about dolphins in the 90s. I still am.
Well, I was also in love with Lisa Frank stuff. And so, you know.
Dolphins are like a tenth of all Lisa Frank.
Yeah, dolphins were like a cornerstone of my four-year-old style.
I'm seeing dolphins and tigers, too, for some reason, in Lisa Frank world.
Yeah. Then there was a game, Magic Crayons, which was like a coloring game. And coloring was involved in a lot of the Pico games because I think it was really like – it was a really fun thing for kids. I mean, kids love coloring. And then, like, this experience of coloring with the Pico was really unique, so.
You know, in most of these games and also Mario Paint more explicitly, they do feel like a reaction to MS Paint and the popularity of, like, paint interface on computers at
like
the time.
Like a digital paint interface. Mm-hmm. And it was so cool. You felt like a little artist. You'd be like, I'll take purple now. Click. And,
we're going to raise a generation of artists. And they did, but they all drew porn on the internet.
They're all meme creators now.
There was Math Antics with Disney's 101 Dalmatians. It is what it sounds like. It's a lot of counting puppies.
You're counting puppies, huh? There was a real resurgence of the Dalmatians in the mid-90s. So.
Yeah, I don't know if that was before or after the movie.
The live-action film was late 96, okay. So just in time. Yeah.
You're getting ready for it.
Mickey's Blast into the Past. Wish I had that one. Yeah. Muppets on the Go. I was a huge Muppets fan. I don't know why I never got that. Yeah, that would have been amazing. Musical Zoo, Pepe's Puzzles.
Is Pepe?
is it the shrimp guy? Muppets?
Maybe.
I don't think he existed then.
No, maybe not.
Richard Scarry's Huckle and Lily's Busiest Day Ever. That was a game that actually came with the Pico.
That was the packet. Yeah, I was wondering which one was the packet. This is Richard Scarry had his own the Busy Town cartoon.
It was on Nick Jr. Yes. Yeah,
and those books were around since the 80s too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the Busy World. Oh, so Pepe is not the racist frog. He is a smiling penguin. We're all safe now.
Oh, nice.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
And he's not the prawn either.
The Richard Scarry game for the Pico was really fun. I remember playing a lot of hours of it. And I also love the cartoon on Nick Jr.
That was a smart pack-in because that was the easiest one of all to connect to, like, this is the books my parents read me, coming alive.
That was a smart pack-in. And I did watch a lot of that cartoon when I was homesick on Nick Jr.
Nick Jr. was my usual daytime. What was I going to do? I wasn't going to watch a Judge show, and I wasn't going to watch a soap opera, so I guess just Nick Jr.
The Magic School Bus Pico game was easily the best one because you travel to different planets. Mm. That was freaking cool. And you learned facts about all the different planets.
And there was a very popular cartoon. I was too old for Magic School Bus, really, but I enjoy
in the Magic School Bus.
See, that connects with me in no way. But I do like seeing nostalgia for it. I feel like a lot of people got into it. I'm seeing a lot of Miss Frizzle memes.
Have you ever
online.
Seen the Magic School Bus meme with Captain Planet?
I haven't.
Oh, my God. Okay. It's all the kids from the Magic School Bus grew up to be the kids in Captain Planet.
I didn't realize that.
Oh, it's
amazing.
They all
became Planeteers, eh?
It's weird. No, look it up. You're going to see it, and you can never unsee it.
I want this ruined for me. Okay, yeah, it's good. I totally understand it. Please, everyone at home, Google it, and it all pans out.
There was, back to the Pico games, there was a Sesame Street Alphabet Adventure. You didn't have that. Smart Alex and Smart Al's Curious Kids. Then there was a Sonic the Hedgehog Game World.
I did YouTube this, and I got to say, the sprite work is really, really cute.
Yeah.
They really cuted up Sonic in this time when he was getting more edgy.
Yeah, it's funny to see him go in the edgier direction while this is like a lot more rounded edges and adorable Sonic. I watched a little playthrough of it as well. Same with in that one, you can play as either Amy, Tails, or Sonic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they all have voices that are way different than you'd expect.
Yeah!
He does say yeah, like, roughly every 5 seconds.
You know, I imagine that there wasn't a ton of memory in
That's
the
true.
Chips for the Pico, so they had, you know, there was a lot of music in those games also. Yeah, there's a choice that had to be made. There was a Bernstein Bears game, going back to the popular books.
Berenstain.
Oh, Berenstain. I used to call them the Bernstein.
The Bernstein Bears. That's a third universe. There's Berenstain, Berenstain, and then the Bernstein Bears. So
maybe it's because I'm from New Jersey.
That could be.
Bernstein. Fits in.
Just like Springsteen.
Yeah. And then last but not least, The Great Counting Caper with the Three Blind Mice. That might be leased. I've never played it. So. Okay.
Yeah. If they can't even get the license for something like Sesame Street or Scholastic, they're just like, hey, Three Blind Mice. Kids all know what that is.
Mother Goose something or other.
They've been blinded. It's depressing. They're mice who were blinded.
And then mutilated.
It's really dark.
What is the point of that nursery rhyme? It's just like, look at how the blinded mice with their tails chopped off run around.
It feels like from a time when all people had was,
vermin.
Well, there were vermin everywhere, and the only entertainment they had was to maim those mice and then see how they run. That's fun.
We don't have TV yet. So, Sam, you're on a lot of Japanese releases. You'll be on a future episode talking about Sailor Moon games.
Yes.
And the first one on here is a Sailor Moon game.
Bishoujo Senshi Sailor Moon S.
And
which is Pretty Soldier Sailor Moon.
Have you looked into like how these games functioned? Or were they all pretty similar to the American releases?
Oh, my goodness. I was looking at the Sailor Moon games on YouTube, and I honestly couldn't understand what the purpose was for educationally speaking for a lot of them. I saw this one, and it was a page with a birthday cake on it, and you were just like putting candles on a cake.
Decorate the cake?
Yeah, it was
interesting.
But like not even with good decorations. Like, and some of them were story-driven. There was a lot of Sailor Moon games for the Pico.
Yeah.
That's not, the little list I have here was just some of them that I liked that I thought would have been really good sales.
Well, that shows like a kid appeal of Sailor Moon, I guess, too, that it really lots of kids were enjoying that show in Japan.
Yeah, they were.
I think
a few years later, they would be enjoying it in North America.
Oh, yeah. And I think probably based on what you're telling me, Sam, and based on the games I'm seeing that were released in Japan, they didn't have to be as wholesome as the American marketing implied. They could say, no, this is just the fun anime thing you interact with. Like, they weren't as explicitly about, this is better than TV. This is better than video games. You're going to be a better person by interacting with Pico.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they were, for instance, there was one for Tokyo Disney Sea, which is the Tokyo Disney Park.
I've been there. I've been there.
They have five different flavors of popcorn.
Oh, man.
I got a popcorn story, man. It was raining there, and me and my friends who went were like, we have to eat all the popcorn, and so we bought the thing that you get free refills on, but it has to be empty, and so we went to our first one, and we were slowly eating the popcorn, and then we get to the second one, we're like, we can't just throw out this popcorn. Okay, everybody, eat popcorn now. Okay, now finally we've got space for the next bag of popcorn.
What is the best popcorn flavor that you've had there, both of you?
My favorite was the white chocolate.
I liked the strawberry flavor popcorn.
That was really good.
That does sound good.
Yeah.
I'm jealous now.
Let's
move on. Let's move on. next game.
Sanrio Puroland. That's also a theme park thing. It feels like in both cases they're hey,
marketing
kids,
theme parks.
Yeah, market the theme parks and also tell kids how cool this theme park is if you got to go to it. Or if you love the theme park, now you get to remember it. Like, that reminds me of how many effing animes have, like, the theme park episode where they're just like, we got to go to the theme park. I'm so excited.
I love that this Sanrio Puro Land game is called Love and Dreams Adventure.
Well, you need both of them.
Yeah. I loved Hello Kitty so much. Sanrio I was such a big fan. There was a Kuropi board game that came out when I was like 5 or 6 years old. And that was my...
My mom's favorite is Batsmaru. That's her favorite. I'm partial to the Twin Stars. I like those guys. They're fun.
Mm-hmm. Is Agretzko like a Sanrio thing?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. I shouldn't be surprised because all they do is make great characters that people want. But I'm still kind of shocked that they're still super relevant. The last, before Agretzko, I remember that the Sleepy Runny Egg was a big character online that everyone identified with. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't know where it came from until I found out. I was like, of course. Like, they will anthropomorphize anything and it'll be great.
I had a very Sanrio weekend. I went to the Agretzko pop-up shop and then watched the Toys That Made Us documentary on Hello Kitty. So
love it.
Yeah.
Love it. But the common theme with all these games is that there would have been, classically for girls. Right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
And I think that the Pico was probably very popular among young girls. I just have to make the assumption because they don't release any demographics about it. But at least you know, I loved it.
You know, that makes sense, too, that in Japan, like America, I think they really gender consoles as for boys. So maybe the Pico got to be the gendered as
there
for girls
so
machine.
There were so many Disney princess games on the Pico. And oh, I didn't – the only one I got was Pocahontas. So I'm still waiting for Ariel one day.
There was a like a this could not have been the other one, but there was a like a proprietary gendered for girls console in Japan that we talked about on our Girl Games episode. I don't remember the name of it, but what's that?
Blech.
That was not the name, but I'm sure it was fine.
Games
but,
for girls, because the rest of the games are boys.
Yes, you can't have the fun games. But
you have
yes,
this Barbie game. That's what you want.
Decorate a cake. Why don't you? So Sam, this is the final word on the Pico. I believe this will be the only Pico release in the podcast release in the past 5 years, so or maybe ever. So this is your chance. Like, well, like, what do you have to say about the Pico? What did it do for you as a child? And like, what do you remember most about it?
Well, I guess to after now we've been talking about the Pico, it makes me think, why don't we start integrating books back into the digital space again in a different way? Like, mm-hmm. this was so unique at the time, and as a child it was magical for me. I imagine that if we were able to bring books back into this a digital game space, that it would be just as interesting for kids.
Well, you know, Sony did try that with their AR-powered Wonder Book.
That's true,
It was kind of like I thought a little bit about the Pico when they premiered that thing. It was a nice little thing, a try, but it also was, at least in America, I don't remember making much of a dent at all. Yeah. I think it just depended on parents owning a PS3, which I don't think many really did.
And mm-hmm. no real support. But
it was more of a European lead thing anyway than that.
Yep. But I guess what I'm saying is specialized educational toys for kids are amazing, and I would love to see more of things like this, especially if I have a family of my own. You know, I would nerd out over this sort of thing. If any fellow Pico fans are listening, high five.
We need to turn the kids on the Pico.
Pico is awesome.
Your take gives me pause, Sam. I'm wondering, like, do kids know – I mean, maybe parents can answer this question, and maybe I'm being naive, but do kids understand books as the main interface to absorb words? I mean, or are they
all – That's changing.
Are they all on tablets? I'm sure everything you're talking about now is an app or is like a leapfrog thing. I'm sure it's all just apps now. So I'm wondering, like, do kids even recognize books as just like, this is how you read, or do they immediately go to a tablet to understand that? I'm really curious. And I don't think that's a downfall of society. I just think things are changing, and I wonder if books have this same presence.
Technology is rapidly changing.
Yes.
Always.
I will say I buy all my books digitally now, and it saved me a lot in terms of moving. So
Sam.
Thank you, technology. And thank you, Pico, for
existing.
Changing Sam's life in some way. I think it was positive. But before we wrap up, let's talk to Sam. You're our special guest. Can you tell us who you are, where you come from, and how we can help you and check out your content?
Hello, hello. My name is Sam Lighthammer, and you can follow me on Twitter at Lighthammer, not Heavy Hammer, but a light hammer. And I'm a social media producer at GameSpot, and sometimes I get to make cool content on occasion.
Awesome. And as for us at Retronauts, we are Patreon supported. If you go to patreon.com/retronauts and pledge $3 a month, you'll get every episode of this podcast a week ahead of time and with no ads and at a higher bitrate. It's the ideal way to listen. And I believe it comes out to like 50 cents per podcast if you break it down. And that's not a lot if you want the ideal listening experience. And it pays for everything. It pays for the studio space, all of our equipment. It pays for dinner for guests, and it pays for just everything you can associate with producing a podcast. All of you folks are so generous for helping out. And if you want to help out the show, go to patreon.com/retronauts and we'll give you a little something in return. And of course, there are higher level rewards if you want to donate more. And we appreciate even $1 a month would be great to help us out. Just say thanks for all the podcast fun. Henry, how about you? Where can we find you?
Well, I'm at HENEREYG on Twitter. You can find me there. And I work on a podcast with Bob as well, the Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon podcast, where Bob and I go through a different episode of The Simpsons in chronological order. We're getting into season 8 now. And we do on What a Cartoon with special guests. We go through a different cartoon each week, including Dario, which we did with Sam here.
Woo.
In this very room.
La, 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 la.
And you can find both of those on your podcast machines, or you can support that at Patreon and get them a week at a time and ad-free at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
Yes, and I've been Bob Mackey, your host, and I am on Twitter as Bob Servo. Please follow me and say hi and let me know what you think of this episode. And as for us, we'll be back on Monday with a brand new full-length episode. Goodbye.